Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking today about how to get the most out of your device's batteries, whether it be your phone, your laptop, other electronics. We'll also talk through some of the types of chargers available and safety around using public charging stations, that among other things, with Jesse LeGrew back with us. Jesse's an information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. He works with designing, developing, and implementing security standards and protocols. So do you have a battery that seems to be or not fully charged? Do you have questions about a type of charger? Other tech problems you're having? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Jesse LeGrew, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be with you.
We get a lot of listeners calling into the show wondering about charging their electronics. A lot of us just plug them in at night, regardless of how charged they are. Is that a good practice?
You know, it's interesting. Throughout the decades, battery technology has changed quite a bit, and I could probably even say beyond that, centuries. And depending on the battery technology used, a lot of the recommendations kind of change. Most of us are using lithium-ion batteries in most of our technology, and for most of those devices, you know, charging it overnight is okay. You know, there's really just a couple recommendations that you know is usually out there. Which is to not drain them completely and not necessarily to keep them to full charge for extended period of time. You know, a recommendation is actually to keep the charge between 30 and, you know, 20 and 80 or 30 and 80%, you know, most of the time. But really, you know, just charge it when you need to is kind of the most solid recommendation. A lot of things we've heard in the past have been, you know, batteries have memory, which a lot of older batteries did. Lithium-ion batteries are a little bit different, and they don't really have that same challenge that people have worked around in the past. So there isn't, you know, a great need to deplete the battery fully or to charge it fully, you know, every single day or at a regular interval.
You know, Diane in Watertown has a question that relates to this directly, so let's go there. Diane, hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call on such a timely topic for myself and my mother, who are both trying to figure out why suddenly our phone batteries won't hold the charge overnight. We both have not ancient, but 2-3 year old Samsung telephones. And my mom is wondering, can she just buy a new battery? She's checking before bed. It's fully charged. She goes into the device maintenance, there's absolutely nothing running in the background, but she'll wake up and it's at 14%. Mine isn't quite that drastic, but mine seems to be doing almost the same thing. Is there a way to fix this?
Depending on the phone, there's a couple different things that could be done. Usually most cellular phone devices, usually a battery still can be replaced. It does depend on the manufacturer. A lot of the lithium-ion batteries that we currently have, they basically have a set number of charges, you know, that you can really use, which is why it's, you know, always recommended charge it when you need to and just use your device normally, because it will, you know, keep track of that over time. But, you know, batteries do have a finite life, and over the life of a device, the amount of charge that it's going to be able to keep does change over time. And it looks like, you know, you've already looked at what is my device kind of doing overnight? Is it doing a lot of work? Because the more work the device is doing, the more power it's taking. So that doesn't appear to be an issue in your case. Usually about 2 years is probably that optimal life of the battery is going to be fading. So getting a battery replacement, I would actually recommend, you know, talking to your carrier. They might have a capability to get a replacement battery. And in some phones, they are customer replaceable, meaning you can take off the back cover to actually get access to the battery and replace it. Otherwise, you might have to actually go to a service center in order to do so. Another possibility, every 3 to 6 months, one thing that can be helpful for the battery, it's not really so much for the battery as it is for the technology inside your phone to help understand how much capacity your battery has, is to actually let it fully deplete and then get charged again, maybe every 3 to 6 months. Usually that's if you notice, you know, your phone says it has 15% of battery life and all of a sudden the battery dies. Well, the information the phone has in terms of, you know, where that depletion period is, kind of needs to be recalibrated. So just making sure it's fully discharged and then recharged, you know, maybe once every 3 to 6 months will be helpful. But if you do have a 2 or 3 year old battery, you know, the easiest thing would actually be to take a look to see if you can get a replacement battery for your phone and contact your service provider or even the vendor. A lot of computer repair facilities might also assist with cell phone battery replacements. So it could just be the case your battery is kind of at that point where it lacks the capacity to keep it charged for a long period of time.
Yeah. And what's a typical cost? Do you know offhand what a battery might cost?
It can change definitely depending on the device. I'd say probably between $30 and $70 probably wouldn't be too uncommon. It could be a little bit more expensive depending on the device. But usually I think it's very much more common where people replace devices every 2 years. So you kind of get to that point and you recycle a device. But hopefully the device battery is going to be fairly common and it's going to be around that $50 range.
Yeah, $50. So you got to figure every 2 or 3 years, another $50 or a new device, basically then. There you go, Diane. Thank you so much. Well, Greg in Waukesha has something that relates as well, so let's just go there. Hi, Greg.
Hello. I have two questions. One is not to belabor the point about batteries, but I have a Dell XPS. It's fairly new. And according to their tech service over the phone, two different people, two different times, one said, leave it plugged in all day when you're at your desk. And I'm at my desk most of the day. Another one, though, said, oh, no, don't do that. Let it get to the point where it signals you that it needs to be plugged in and then plug it in. So I was wondering, which of those do you think is correct? The second question, though, is maybe a little bit easier. When you put it in a sleep mode, does that reduce power usage or does it cut off power usage?
So I'll answer the first question. It's actually, interestingly enough, it's kind of a mix between the two in terms of how you might want to at least treat the battery in your device. Depending, you know, a lot of newer devices, even if you have it plugged in all the time, you know, one of the concerns is, you know, you can have issues with heat in devices, but you can also have issues with kind of trickle charging and how the power is actually moving either through the battery to the device. Most of the time, you can leave a device plugged in all the time, and it's going to function normally. You can unplug it and let it, you know, discharge and recharge, but it's not something you're going to be, you know, needing to do every day. It would be useful probably to use the battery every now and again just to ensure that the battery and the sensor and the device is calibrated to know if I actually have a 50% charge, is it the proper metric for the battery? So if you never use the battery, it's not going to be great. Most common devices they're used to being plugged in all the time, and they're going to have the technology in place to you know, not damage the battery. But, you know, at least with cell phones, they recommend usually between 20 and 80%, keeping it anywhere between that range, usually not higher or lower, but kind of keeping it that partial charge state. A laptop is using a very similar battery in many cases. It's just a little bit bigger. And, you know, in theory, it would be similar, but it's also kind of a pain to turn off and turn on something regularly in order to do that. But also, when you're doing that, you are depleting the amount of charge cycles that the battery has. So if the battery has, let's say, 400 charge cycles, and you are constantly, you know, discharging and recharging it, in theory, those cycles are going down. Whether or not you actually need to use the battery, over time, it's going to degrade anyway. But you might actually be lessening the life of your battery by using it more frequently rather than keeping it plugged in. But it is useful at least to keep that battery active a little bit over time, you know, maybe, you know, once a week, once a month. If you never use the battery, you know, maybe you never have to worry about it. But I would say if I had to lean either way, I'd say probably keeping it plugged in all day is usually where I lean. But if you're actually able to use the battery a little bit semi-frequently, I think that would be useful. So I wouldn't necessarily go to either extreme of trying to find a sweet spot in the middle.
Sleep mode.
Yeah, and so sleep mode, there's a variety of ways, and the terminology is a little bit different. And so they have, you know, for example, sleep. They also have hibernate, and there's a variety of other things you might also hear. Generally, hibernate will save all the active information that's on your computer, usually on the hard drive, and actually fully power the device off. So when you turn the device back on, it restores all that information back into memory so you can start using it again. So it's actually not using any battery power at all. Sleep usually will put it into a low power mode and stop a lot of active activities with applications that are running on your system, where it's just enough power to keep things running in memory so that when you turn your device back on or when you open your device, you can start using it again. So it depends on whether you get that slow or fast startup time. It's kind of the difference between sleep and hibernate. And so hibernate puts it on your hard drive so you can effectively save all your battery life. And sleep puts it into a low power mode where you're able to start up faster, but it is using power in the background. And then, you know, you have that other mode when you're just on battery and, you know, you might have the monitor dim a little bit to lower light level. So it's using less power, but it's still running off battery. And so you have different, bands of power usage depending on what you go at. But basically sleep is still using battery. It's just trying to allow you to quickly wake up that device when you need it. But that battery is still trickling, and depending on the device, may go into hibernate if it hits a certain threshold where it knows I'm going to lose data unless I do this, and then it will go into that power off mode and save that information to your hard drive, so at least you don't lose anything. But you can also fully customize those settings, so that makes it a little bit trickier. Usually the default settings that come with, you know, Mac OS or Windows have that built in, but you can actually put sleep mode into a state where it will simply lose all the data and it will not go into that hibernate mode. So always check your power settings. The defaults are usually recommended, but you can change them based on how you use your device as well. So hopefully that helps.
Yeah, Greg, thank you so much. Appreciate the call. Larry in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Larry.
Yes, I'm very new to hearing aids, and the instructions are to take the tab off the battery and wait for a minute before inserting them. And I was wondering why that was.
Take the tab off the battery.
The hearing aid battery. They come with a little tab on the negative side.
Oh, I see. And then you take it off before you insert it to actually use it, but you're supposed to wait a bit.
Yes, you're supposed to wait at least a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, and so this one was a little bit new to me. I did look up some information. So apparently the reason to take, and you'll see this with a lot of batteries, you'll actually see it in different devices where you kind of take off, you know, a piece of tape or something so that the battery can make contact with the device. It's actually so the air can actually properly activate the battery. I'm not a chemist, so I'm not exactly sure what that means, although it's recommended to, you know, wait about 5 minutes and then place the battery into the hearing aid and then go ahead and use it. So it's just to make sure that the battery is working properly, and it will actually extend the battery life, in this case, probably by a few days, depending on the hearing aid, but it just allows the battery to properly activate.
All right. There you go, Larry. Thank you so much for calling. Jesse LeGrew, our guest today. We're talking power management, batteries, chargers, and, of course, a whole lot more. We'll be taking other kinds of questions as well relating to your devices. Natalie Guyette, our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jesse LeGrew, information security architect in Madison College. It's great to have him with us today. Certainly, if you have questions for him, I hope you'll join in as we talk power management, batteries, chargers, and a whole lot more with him. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's turn to Jeff in Berry Mills. Thank you for calling, Jeff. What's on your mind?
Yes, I have another charging question, as a matter of fact. I have a... It has two ports on it. One is for 2.1 amps. Hello?
You broke up there, Jeff, and we missed the first part. You have two...
I have a wall cap. And the one port is 2.1 amps, and the other port is 1 amp only. Which one should I plug my Google Pixel into?
And so it'll you probably can use either. Usually what will happen between, especially a newer device and any kind of battery charger, is especially for newer devices, they'll kind of negotiate the power that's available, and it shouldn't draw more power than it needs. And, you know, that's always recommended using, you know, the cables that are provided by the manufacturer. For example, the Pixel in this case, you should be able to use either. If it is capable of drawing more power, the 2.1 amps will allow it to charge faster, depending on the technology that's available in the device. But you can also plug it into the 1 amp, and usually the 1 amp is going to be for, you know, a cell phone or a smaller device. 2.1 amp is generally for a little bit larger device that draws a little bit more power. So, for example, a tablet. In theory, you should be able to use a 2.1 amp socket, and if it does need to negotiate lower, it should be able to do that, you know, with the appropriate, you know, cable and device on the other end. So you can use either, but the 1 amp will still work fine. Usually that 2.1 amp is just for a little bit larger device.
All right. There you go, Jeff. Thank you. Carl in Eagle River, your turn. Hi, Carl.
Hi there. I have a question about iPhones and the cords that charge them. It seems like you spend $20 and then they don't work any longer. It seems like they're getting more and more expensive, different designs than that, and they just don't last. And the other problem I have is when you buy an expensive drill, once the manufacturer decides to give it a different battery, and they no longer sell the battery that the original one came with.
I can relate to all that, Carl. What do you think, Jesse?
And this kind of fits on another interesting point as well, in terms of the variety of chargers and cables that are out there, not just the chargers but also batteries. And so, for example, with, let's say, an iPhone, you know, they have the specially manufactured, or at least cables that are built by the manufacturer according to certain specifications, usually there are less expensive alternatives that you can find in a variety of places, but they do vary in quality. And I think that's one of the concerns that can happen. In addition to some of the quality concerns of, you know, how well it could charge your device, not to mention any kind of warranty that it may impact for your device. There has been a risk recently of cable manufacturers actually having a little bit more than what you'd want bargained for in that cable, including information or technology that could actually take or transmit data to and from your device. And that's actually been seen in public USB stations. Different cables may also include some of that technology. So I would just say be careful. Make sure that you get the appropriate charger and that it's built to specifications from the manufacturer of the phone or the device, because there can be a risk out there for devices that actually may, you know, not work as well or may you know, do bad things on your device in terms of transmitting or saving information to or from your device. You know, that being said, you know, the challenge with different batteries, different chargers, that's a continual challenge. I think the industry, especially with mobile devices, USB-C, for example, has become a little bit more universal, and it's used in a variety of devices, and not just cell phones, but many other remote devices, earbuds, hard drives, which allows for a little bit easier of use. But each device, you know, they might have their own proprietary connectors. And so it kind of depends on what you're looking for, but there's a balance either way. Sometimes the capabilities you want only exist in one device that might have their own special charger or their own special cable. So there's a give and take there. There's no easy answer. Usually, you know, there's a variety of open or standard specifications out there that can be used for chargers, but, you know, each group is a little bit different, each manufacturer, and, you know, you might just get stuck where you have to replace something. And even in the case of, like, drill batteries, you know, the batteries that you get with those are not, you know, they're made with a variety of the same technologies as cell phone batteries, lithium ion. Those also have a battery life where you might have to replace the batteries. And so that's kind of going in there. How new or how old is the battery technology? Because they do come with updates, you know, every decade or two. And it's good to know when an old technology might fall off and you're kind of in that phase where you might have to be prepared for something else. So I don't have an easy answer for it, only that, you know, the more devices you have with a similar battery and a similar charger, usually it'll put you in a good place where you can kind of balance the devices you have. But if no one is making that technology anymore, you're kind of at that point where you're kind of forced to make a change. So it's a challenge that I don't have a good answer for, but it's good to be aware of, because it is something that will continually happen.
And I'm just back to one of your comments there. If you're at the airport, you go to the airport, and you know, everybody's got their phone charged in at these charging stations, or you go to a coffee shop, they may have them there. Are you saying that there could be a problem with that?
There could be. Basically, a lot of the cell phones that we have, or, you know, even external hard drives, the way you can plug them into a computer, you can use to transfer files, transfer software, and it can be really, really useful. And usually that requires plugging in your phone into a USB port on your computer so that you can, you know, transfer files or other information. That same technology can also be used in a variety of other circumstances. So, for example, if you go to a coffee shop and there is a USB charger, when you plug it into that USB, it's hard to know what's on the other end of that USB terminal. It could be a computer that's actually using it as a storage device and actually transmitting data back and forth. Or it could be going directly to you know, the power infrastructure where there's no you know, technology or computing technology in the background that could be stealing data or trying to put data on your device. So it's a risk, but it always depends on where you are. You also never know, just like a credit card terminal, if somebody does put on a card skimmer, it may look very much the same. But somebody might be actually stealing the information when you swipe a card. So it's not dissimilar to that, where it could also be tampered with by another guest that happens to be at your coffee shop. So if you do see a charger, it's always going to be safe to bring your own plug with your own cable and plug it directly into the outlet than using the USB that's available, because that USB could be something that's transmitting data back and forth. Most devices that are relatively new, when you plug it in, it will actually ask you, would you like to use this as usually a storage device, or to allow for data flow between you and whatever you're plugging into. So hopefully you get that notification and you have the capability of saying no if there is something malicious on the other end. But, you know, the best thing to do is don't use a USB charger, especially in a public place. Use a power outlet and make sure that you're using your own cable with your own plug.
And let's, Carl, again, thank you. Doug in Waniwok, your turn. Hi, Doug.
Well, I have it's not a phone or computer question. It's outdoor tools and the storage and maintaining of them. I just got a recent battery, and it said to store it at 30 to 50% capacity, charge it before you use it. And some of them are winter, some of them are warmer weather type, you know, tools. But I'm just kind of curious. I mean, these batteries cost a lot of money.
Yeah, and it's actually, so that recommendation too actually does fit with the recommendations for cell phones as well. So the lithium-ion batteries that you have in a cell phone, they recommend if you aren't using it for, you know, an extended period of time, let's say it's a month, let's say it's 6 months, store it at about 50% battery capacity. But you also might want to check on the battery capacity every month or so. Some batteries will drain a little bit faster than others, but they the recommendation is not to let that battery completely drain by the next time that you use it. So, you know, one of the recommendations was keep between 20 and 80% of the battery life whenever you're using it or not in use. So keeping it at that 50% hopefully increases the chances it's not going to fully get depleted by the next time you use it. But it might also be a good idea, check the battery capacity after a month or two. If it's dropping down to 20%, charge it back up to 50 again and, you know, set it on the shelf. Each battery is going to work a little bit different. Some may also not have a great indicator in terms of what percentage of battery life they have. But the goal would be to actually keep it around 50% maintain it, and also keep it in an area that's not too hot or too cold, which is another good recommendation for batteries for cell phones as well. So lithium-ion batteries, keep it in 70 degrees is a great temperature. Anything too hot, you can have a variety of chemical issues with batteries, so you don't want to keep it out in the sun or get it too warm. So keep it in a relatively comfortable environment. For an individual, it's usually pretty comfortable for the battery. And, you know, try to maintain as much that 50% charge. But if you do have it on the shelf for a year, you're probably going to want to check it more often. It's probably not going to last for a year in storage without, you know, maybe charging it up a little bit more just to help it maintain that 50% capacity or at least close to it. So it's a good recommendation, and it does fit with any kind of mobile cell phone or tablet device you might have. If you have a tablet you're not going to use for 6 months, the same recommendation applies. Charge it up to about 50%, store it away. But if you know it's going to be a little bit longer, you might need to charge it up a little bit more to get back up to that 50% and then set it back on the shelf again. So the goal is to keep it within that 20 to 80% range so that the next time you use it, the battery is okay. At the extremes of, you know, fully charged and not charged at all, there are some chemical processes that can affect the life of the battery. So it's really just trying to maintain that middle band of full, but not completely full and not completely empty.
Thank you again for that call. Graham from Fitchburg, in a kind of related thing here, called and was wondering if phone manufacturers would ever make a feature where phones would stop charging somewhere between 20 and 80%, or if that's, if there's a way to make that happen.
Yeah, and there, you know, I would be surprised if that didn't exist today. In many cases, the power of our devices is really controlled by software and hardware that allow us to do a variety of things. And that's actually one of the mechanisms that allows, when you do have it plugged in, for example, overnight, it has the capability of, you know, maintaining where that power is going and regulating it so it doesn't kind of overcharge or allow more energy to come in. So that there are things that can be done in software. I haven't done any of them myself, but one of the other things that I've seen is you can also put timers on outlets and a variety of other resources that also help you to control power coming in and out at certain times. And there are a variety of recommendations, especially for cell phones. And one that I had seen was, you know, you charge it, you plug it in before you go to bed. You probably are going to have a charge within an hour or two, and then it's going to remain plugged in on full charge for 6 hours. One of the recommendations was if you wake up in the middle of the night and remember, unplug the charger. Well, that seems kind of unrealistic day after day after day. It is a recommendation to keep it between, you know, once again, that 20 and 80% limit, but it's difficult for a person to kind of recall it. Either way, even that, you know, let's say a battery is going to last 2 to 3 years, it's more likely our day-to-day usage is going to affect the lifetime of that battery than whether we have it charging or have it plugged in overnight. And so there are some things that can be done in software or hardware to assist with that. And I would honestly be surprised if there wasn't something that did that. But overall, you know, the battery is still going to have a finite life, and you might be able to squeak out a little bit more time from the device, but it may not be enough to really matter as much as you're hoping.
Jim in Omaha, Nebraska has something that relates to an earlier caller's question. Jim, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a suggestion for the fellow that called in about batteries becoming obsolete, making his tools obsolete. Mm-hmm. I was getting ready to throw out or not throw out, recycle a whole set of tools because the NiCad batteries that they just quit working. They quit charging. And I Googled or Amazon. I can't remember. I just put the battery model in there, and I came up with a bunch of different choices. And I was able to upgrade to nickel metal hydrate from NiCad for not much money, $25 or something. So it saved a whole set of tools for me.
Yeah, so those discontinued batteries, there are places where you can find models online then, Jim. Thank you. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We had Steve in Waterford with a different kind of question. Let's go there. Hi, Steve.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
See, I have an interesting situation. All of a sudden on my computer, my email, which is a Google, comes up in the upper left corner of my screen at a font of about one. It's ridiculous. And I can't seem to do anything to make it go back to the normal size where you can actually read it on the screen. And I think it happened after an update when I overnight, you know, how they upgrade the computer. All of a sudden I got that little notice saying your computer's been upgraded, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden I turned on my email and it's about the size of a 3x5 card up in the upper left corner of my screen.
I've had that happen to me too. And there is an adjustment that occurs. Jesse, are you familiar with it?
I'm not sure if it's the application window or the font size. Are you using a web browser to view your email?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
So I have my guess, but Larry, if you have some wisdom you'd like to impart here.
Well, I tell you what, the wisdom I imparted was to go to my IT guy, and he did it for me. In about two clicks, I had it done. And I'm now trying to, I'm looking at my computer now, trying to remember exactly what, where I had to go to get it fixed.
So if it's what I'm, most of the, most users that do use Gmail or a variety of other email clients do use a web browser. And one of the common things that can happen is the web browser view can actually be zoomed in or zoomed out. And so you can get really big text or you can get really, really small text. If it is the zoom feature, you can actually usually go to view, it should be a similar menu, but view, zoom, and then actual size or reset will change it back to the default setting size so that the text, hopefully should be better readable. And I did just test this with, Firefox and Chrome. If you do have your web browser, your email open, and then you hit the control and, zero key, it should reset the size back to default as well. And that's assuming it's the text size. So control and then the number zero will hopefully reset the text size so you can read it. If it's the window where the window is just really, really tiny, you should be able to double click on the very top of the menu bar, and it should maximize it so you can kind of see it on a full screen. My guess is it's going to be that text view, and control zero is going to do it. Otherwise, if you hit control and use, if you have a scroll wheel on your mouse, control and then scrolling up makes it bigger, control and scrolling down makes it smaller. So that could be another way to do it as well.
Yeah, I think what happened in my case, I went to view and then zoom and then 100%. When you click on zoom, you get different percentages with at least with my Mac.
Yep.
And that fixed the problem right away. So there you go, Steve. I try that and see what happens. I hope I wish you good luck because it is very, very frustrating. For sure. Well, Jesse LeGrue, our guest today, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Jesse LeGrue, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. Great to have him. He comes by every couple months to talk with us about a variety of things relating to our devices. We've zeroed in a bit today on batteries and chargers and that sort of thing, but we're taking other questions as well. And I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take another call. Nick in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Nick. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I love technology, but it can be a pain in the butt sometimes. I'm in the ham radio, and, of course, we got the walkie-talkies that use the batteries. And the major manufacturers for the ham radios, they just gouge you on the batteries. Now, can we do, like, in the old days, like, zap the batteries once they get bad? Or and how long is the life expectancy of the batteries? Because it's not even worth buying a battery for the radio. It's just you might buy a new radio because it's, the batteries are so outrageously expensive.
Hmm. What do you think, Jesse?
Yeah, and that's it's a tough one. Do you happen to know if they're what type of battery that you're currently using in your own walkie-talkies? Are they lithium-ion?
Yeah, they're lithium-ion. You know, they're supposed to be better, but they still, you know, start to die after a while.
Yep. Yeah, and the unfortunately the life of those batteries, I mean it's the same thing with a cell phone, laptop, they're all using lithium ion. They do have a specific lifetime in terms of charges, and the total capacity will degrade over time as well. So you're kind of forced to purchase new ones, especially depending on how frequently you do discharge and recharge them. There might be some capabilities depending on the walkie-talkie itself, because a lot of the battery technologies is not just the battery itself. but what the battery is being used in. Because there is some technology behind the scenes that does allow for some better use cases and better management of power. But, you know, there's really nothing you can do in terms of if a battery dies, what do you do with it? You really would have to look at, you know, getting a new battery or, you know, in this case, if there is a new technology, which many are being developed, beyond lithium ion, there might be that capability of upgrading to a different technology should it still function within the device. But there's not a whole lot to do in the chemistry of the battery's breaking down. You're just kind of limited by what's capable for the device.
You know, you mentioned new technologies, and I was just reading this morning something about the future of batteries in automobiles where they're working on making new batteries part of the skin of the vehicle, and they're using, I don't know, some sort of silicone, other device in it so that you won't have a big battery sitting somewhere. Instead, it'll be part of your trunk or your fenders or whatever in the car itself. And there was some mention that this could also maybe be applied to things like your phone.
Yeah, and a lot of times there's, at least with the chemistry of batteries, there's really just a flow of electrons coming between at least two portions, the more surface area in general, the more atoms or electrons in theory you could kind of put into that space. That could allow for longer battery life, but also more battery capacity. And, you know, using the surface area of a device dramatically increases how they could be used. Looking inside a battery, it always depends on how they're constructed. But, yeah, there's a lot of new ways that that could be done. Of course, it is interesting when you look at a car, if you did manage to make the entire surface of the car effectively a battery, what does that mean when the battery dies? For the life of that device, do you have to replace all of the outside of the car, or how does that work? And there's a variety of ways to do, but recycling batteries and actually being able to refurbish batteries is also kind of an interesting component of it, because even with older devices, you might be able to refurbish you know, existing batteries to newer technologies, or at least get them reconditioned so you can actually use the batteries again. So there's a lot of options, but even refurbishing batteries or, you know, migrating to a newer technology may still be expensive, and in the long run may not be as cost-effective as purchasing a new device.
Hmm. Well, Mark in Appleton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Currently, I'm running Windows 10 on one of my machines, and it's been really good about updating up until just recently. FlashCore ActiveX is being discontinued, I guess. And the last update does not want to update on my machine. I've gone online and done all the Google searches and YouTube things and haven't had any luck to get around that. Now, I know that they're discontinuing that. And how are they replacing it, Windows 10?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And so ActiveX is developed by Adobe, not by Microsoft. And Microsoft is ending support for the Flash Player in their web browser, which in this case would be Internet Explorer or Edge, so that it's not available. And there's a kind of a variety of reasons behind it. Flash has had a variety of security issues and other challenges, throughout the entire adoption of the technology and usage of newer web technology, HTML5, and a variety of other open source alternatives to Flash have been available to use. So it's kind of a tough spot because developers may have used Flash to develop a lot of the things that they have, and Microsoft is simply just not allowing it to be used in their browser. One alternative is to use a different web browser if Flash is supported in that web browser. So, for example, that could be Chrome, it could be Firefox, but they also may have other issues there. And actually looking at Adobe's site, the Flash player is actually end of life as of the end of this year. So even Adobe looks like they will not be updating it. That the technology is going away. It's being replaced by something else. So in this case, it's less of a how can I update my browser with the latest plugin, because it simply will not be updated anyway. You won't have really any options in about 2 months. HTML5 is really the place where a lot of web developers need to go. So short story, there's not much you can do. Hopefully your favorite websites are updating their sites to not use Flash and will be using other things that don't require that third-party plugin. So not a whole lot you can do. That is simply the way it's going to be, and it is end of life as of this calendar year.
Mm-hmm. There you go, Mark. Not the best news for you, but there you have it. Alex in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Alex.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So, with the USB-C chargers that are being used for a lot of the new cell phones, I've done some research and it's saying that you have to be using USB-C compliant cords, that otherwise they let too much power try to be drawn from an outlet in your house if you use one of those little adapters that you put the USB-A side in. And then they're saying if you don't put it in the correct USB-C on your laptop and you use something that's a USB-A at a 1.0 or 2.0, things like that, that it could draw too much power from your laptop if it's not the right USB-C compliant cord. And I'm having a hard time on figuring out if a cord is USB-C compliant when a lot of cords just, don't say anything about that, about their power draw or anything. They just say that they're a cord with this adapter on one end and this adapter on the other.
Yeah, it's a good question and a common concern, especially when you can go to pretty much any website or you can go to any store and find a variety of USB cables that all look the same, that are made by different manufacturers, and it seems that they should all also have the same capabilities, but it's not always necessarily so. One thing I would recommend for any USB cable that you do get, I would recommend potentially getting one from the manufacturer of your device. One of the challenges between a lot of the different adapters, whether it's converting from USB 2 or USB 1 to USB-C, for all of these power management features to work between your battery and the device, so it could, for example, be an external charger or a battery pack, they need to be able to speak the same language, and the cable is a part of that. And so making sure that you have a cable that does have all of the standards built into it is important, because those features may not work otherwise. And you might have seen it on your device where you plug in a power connector, and it actually does note that there's an issue maybe with your cable or can't give you full charge or some capabilities may not be available. And that could be to a lack of being compliant with the specifications for the cable or on the charger or on the power source on the other end. So they do have, listings whether they're compliant or not, but I always take a look and get the power cables or get charging cables directly from the manufacturer, because at least they've been validated with their devices. They might be a little bit more expensive, but at least you can have a little bit extra assurance that The cables are going to have all the capabilities that you're looking for. I would recommend against brands maybe that you do not recognize or that aren't the manufacturers either by, you know, the charger that you're using or for the device that you're using. Because many times the lower cost alternatives are lower cost for a reason, including cutting some corners on implementing the technology that's, you know, really required for the standard of that cable. So take a look at your manufacturer, see what you can get there, because likely you will get better performance and it's just going to work better overall and have a longer lifespan.
All right. There you go, Alex. Thank you so much for calling. Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, information security architect at Madison College's Technology Services Group. And he's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Jesse. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for sticking around with us. We're talking about, or talking with one of our tech experts, all about caring for the batteries of your devices, charging do's and don'ts, and taking other questions as well relating to your computers. Jesse LeGrew, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group, our guest. He assists with designing, developing, and implementing security standards and protocols. So, what would you like to know about batteries or charging stations? What other tech questions or problems do you have? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And we have open lines to get you on pretty quickly. Let's take Kathy in Dodgeville now. Kathy, what's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I got a wacko phone here. I have a Samsung Galaxy S10e that I've had almost 2 years. It's a replacement for another phone, and it turns off settings with no particular reason. Sounds, Wi-Fi. Auto rotate. My data usage has skyrocketed. The battery is running too fast. When I realized that my Wi-Fi was turned off for I don't know how long. You know, I don't go anywhere. I'm isolating, so I'm at home. It should be on Wi-Fi all the time. So I'm not sure if I need a phone replacement or is this a typical problem with Samsung?
Well, it sounds like the configuration on the device might be changing a little bit, which is causing some of the issues. And sometimes, depending on applications that are installed, they can have varying levels of permissions to your device, including even changing some settings if they're available. Depending on what you actually have set up on your device, this can be a little bit easier for some than others. I might actually recommend doing a factory reset on your device and setting it up from scratch just to make sure that there are no settings in the background that could be causing issues. If it was a recent thing that occurred, you might also want to consider looking at the applications that you've installed recently and removing those applications because those could cause some challenges as well. But it does sound like it's the settings are changing, and normally they wouldn't change randomly. There's something causing the challenge with it. And resetting it to factory defaults and setting it up from scratch might be a good way at least to test the device to see if everything is working as intended. If you do have data on your device, I always recommend, you know, backing that up first. But if you do reset the device and, you know, start with minimal applications or really just what you need, hopefully those settings are going to be maintained. If you do have it synchronized with a Google account, there could be some interaction there as well. If you do reset it and join it to your Google account and still notice some things changing around, it could be something actually synchronizing with your Google account as well. But a lot of times, you know, if it's charging overnight, it could be a variety of things, including the battery may not have the capacity, or it might be doing something overnight that's simply causing it to power down, meaning that, you know, there's something in the background that's causing heavy power consumption. You know, using cellular instead of wireless will actually just draw more power in general. The key is just finding out what might be changing that setting. If you've used it before and you haven't had the issue and it's just recently, I'm hoping resetting it to defaults is going to help just, you know, ensure that you have a very pristine phone, and then kind of set things up from scratch. Many times, the factory reset's also going to just you're going to see a little bit more responsiveness from your device as well, but also make sure you do have the latest updates on your device, because sometimes there are updates that will actually fix a lot of those issues as well.
Is it pretty easy to reset the factory?
It's pretty easy. You can usually go to settings, and I think it's either about phone, at least for an Android device, and you can go ahead and do the factory reset. And there are a variety of different ways to back up your phone. Many of the items are usually cloud devices, or they have cloud storage for a lot of your things like email. But it is always good to just double check and make sure that there's nothing specifically stored on your phone that's not backed up somewhere else. You know, photos is a very common one, but also if you do have an Android that is connected to a Google account, it's also very common for those to be backed up automatically in your Google account. So I would just check those first before resetting it. But resetting the default at least will help you get to that pristine state. And then hopefully you can set a few apps up and see how things run. If things don't work well in that factory reset mode, there's definitely another issue there. But even a defect with the battery wouldn't cause those settings to be changed. So it does make me think that there's some other software concern, or it could have been one setting that allowed you to easily change it without thinking about it. Which is also very common. and so just cleaning up those settings to default at least will free up the time where you might have to just really search to find out what setting it was. I think the factory reset should at least help you get to a better place.
There you go, Kathy. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Jim emailed to say that many times when he downloads a photo, original or edited, he generally puts them in a folder. Later, when he tries to locate and attach them, he can't find them. Any ideas?
It depends on whether it's a do we know if it's a mobile device or if it's like a laptop or a desktop?
I'm guessing. Doesn't really, we can't really tell from what he's probably taking something from a phone, his phone, and putting it into maybe a folder on his desktop.
Okay.
I'm just not sure.
So I'll, let's say it was a Mac or a Windows device, the next time you do save a picture, usually there's a window that comes up when you're actually specifying the folder. There's a little address bar at the very top that tells you what folder you're in. So if you're not quite sure where those folders are going, try to save another picture, and usually it's going to actually have kind of the breadcrumbs in terms of where exactly it's storing that data. So hopefully it'll help you locate that information. If you're also using it on a mobile device, mobile devices can store to a variety of locations, whether they're to attach storage. Maybe you have a SIM or not a SIM card, but a SD card, or you're saving it to the cloud. Usually it will also tell you where you're storing it in that window. So the next time you save a picture, take a look to see where it is saving it. If it is a mobile device like an Android, you can also get some file management applications that are available on the Google Play Store for free that you might be able to better manage where those locations are going, or even just sort based on where are the most recent files that were stored on your device, and so you can at least try to track it down that way. So I would just try to save another picture and hope you get that like save as dialog box where it will show you at the top where it's located. And then, you know, from there, at least you'll know where to, you know, lead your application to using it in the future.
All right. Let's take another call from Craig in Jefferson. Hi, Craig. Craig, are you there? Maybe we lost Craig. Let's go to Patty in Birchwood next. Hi, Patty.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Okay, so I bought a smart TV, a Samsung smart TV, and I am no whiz kid with this stuff. And on it was the Roku channel. I want Turner Classic Movies. So I Googled who has Turner Classic Movies, and it said the Roku channel has it. So I went to the Roku channel, I went to apps, I spent 3 hours looking all over the place for this TMC app. It came up in a million different places, but none of them were Roku. I tried to contact Roku, but there is no phone customer service. And anyway, got stuck in this mirage of stuff. And the bottom line was that I found out that the Roku channel on my, quote, smart TV is a limited Roku channel and that I need to go buy a Roku stick. Now, how is somebody, a consumer, supposed to know before you buy something what the limits of the device are, especially if you're not an IT person already?
Okay.
That's a very good question. The one recommendation I would have for anyone that's shopping, especially in a store, which is probably going to give you, you know, a lot more information as well, is leverage the experts that you have at that location. To help you better understand, you know, what limitations may exist. And usually many of them, you know, they're getting a variety of new products all the time as well. So I think even for individuals that do this on a day-to-day basis, it's also hard to keep track of it as well, to understand what those limitations are. But I would just recommend reaching out to the individuals that you're purchasing the products from. You can get a lot of information online when you're browsing and looking for devices, but also a lot of the online shops now will have a Q&A feature where you can actually ask other individuals that have purchased it to see what features may or may not exist with the device, or even look through previous questions. One thing I did look on for the Roku specifically, one way you can modify the channels that are available on your Roku account are actually to log in via the web. So if you likely have had to create a Roku account just to use the TV, you can actually log into your Roku account online on a computer or even on your mobile device and actually modify the channels that you're using and get some additional information there. So it's a different way to manage it that might be a little bit more streamlined than actually doing it directly through the TV. And one thing I did find is for TCM, the Turner Classic Movies, it does actually note on the website cable or satellite subscription required. So it actually does require something in addition to even the Roku service as well. Unfortunately, it's very challenging. There's a lot of information out there. And sometimes it does mean kind of going through piece by piece to get a better understanding. But usually the real answers for many of those questions, hopefully they're going to be at the locations you're purchasing the equipment from. But there are also a variety of user groups or even comments on the service themselves like Roku where you can get the answers. And in this case, I did find it from the Roku channel that actually did note, you know, what's required. It didn't. I didn't find it quickly on whether it uses the stick or not. But that is it is a common challenge, especially when there are a variety of products out there. So I would. It's a lot of research. It's a lot of talking to people that hopefully have the information because they've been there before. But I would recommend reaching out to you know, the sales professionals that you have at the locations where you're purchasing the equipment from. They've probably had the question before and can easily answer it, and can also give you other options even if you don't like you know, the path you're on right now. They can usually point you in a direction that helps you answer the problem you're solving.
Good luck, Patty. Thank you so much for calling. Aaron in Prairie du Sac, it's your turn. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, this is Karen, and thank you for taking my call. And I had a question about antivirus software. I have a Toshiba laptop that's about 4 years old, and I really haven't updated any virus software since I got it, and I know I should be, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on recommendations.
Are you using, do you know what version of Windows you're using? Is it Windows 10, Windows?
It's Windows 10.
Okay. Did you have any other antivirus installed when you purchased it, such as Symantec,
yeah,
McAfee,
Norton.
Or? Okay.
Norton.
And my guess is Norton is likely, usually with the laptops that you purchase, they'll come with a limited subscription. Either it's, you know, 3 months or 1 year where the antivirus will function. Do you happen to know whether the Norton expired or if it's still on your computer?
Guessing it's still on my computer, but I don't know if it's active anymore after this time.
Okay. What I'd probably recommend, because it's very likely that the Norton is installed, probably if you didn't remove it, and it is inactive because the subscription expired. One thing I would recommend is actually just removing the Norton antivirus that came with your computer, and I would make sure that your computer is completely up to date after that, because right now within Windows 10, there is a built-in antivirus feature that's actually built into Windows that can offer you a lot of the similar protections that are otherwise available in those subscriptions. That just comes for free. So I would.
And it's pretty good, too.
Yeah, it's pretty good, and they update it all the time, and they also do have a variety of more enterprise products out there. At first, I think when it was originally out, it was behind a lot of those other industry leaders like Symantec, Norton, McAfee, but they've done quite a bit over the last, you know, 5 or so years to get it to the place where it is today. So remove Symantec, make sure you have automatic updates turned on, make sure you have all your updates installed, because those updates do include the antivirus program and the signatures for it. And if you just want to check to see whether your protected on your computer and what's turned on, in Windows 10, you can go to the control panel, and they do have something called virus and threat protection. You should actually see that on your computer, and it'll tell you about what's turned on or not. It may say that Norton's turned on. It may not, but it'll at least tell you kind of what's being done now. But if you remove Norton, it's likely going to tell you, hey, make sure you're turning on Windows virus threat protection or Windows Defender, and it will have that protection enabled for you, hopefully automatically.
All right. Karen, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. Mary in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I love your show. Thanks for taking my call. We
sure.
have all Apple products, a desktop. We've got iPad Pro, 7th generation, an older iPad, about 4th generation, iPhone 10 and 8. And our contacts used to be on everything. Now they disappear. They are on our oldest iPad, But if I put in a new contact in my phone, it might not be on all the devices. I might call you today, and then tomorrow you're gone. If I say, hey, Siri, call Larry, she'll find Larry, but it's gone in my contact, except they all stay on our oldest iPad.
Oh, boy. What do you think, Jesse?
Are you currently using the same iCloud account on all of your devices?
Well, we think that might have been the problem because we bought some more storage, and it seems like after we did that, we started having problems.
Okay. What I would probably do first, because usually it's going to be synchronizing between all the devices using, you know, the Apple ID that you have associated. It's kind of built in, which synchronizes not just contacts, but it can do bookmarks and everything else. I would log into your iCloud account on the web just to see if you're noting those contacts there. Because really, what's going to be distributed to all your devices is centrally stored in iCloud, in Apple. And if you look there first, if that does appear to be accurate, one thing that actually might be easy enough is just to disconnect and then reconnect your iCloud account to those devices, which might allow it to resynchronize and take all the information that you think isn't updating and actually make sure that that information's updated. The nice thing about the iCloud web interface, it also does tell you, here are the devices that you have registered, here's you know, their synchronization status, and it gives you some information there so you can help to troubleshoot. But ideally, everything's in that iCloud account. If you log in there and then you find out, this doesn't seem to have those latest contacts either, it might mean that that older device has all the updated information, but for whatever reason isn't pushing it up to iCloud. I would check iCloud first to see if it's there, because the one challenging piece with all of it is when you start unchecking and checking some of these synchronization features, when you start unchecking it, it might remove data from a certain device. So it's always good to be careful, know where the data is stored and where it seems to be updated. And even before changing the synchronization settings, as much as you can, export the information that you're, you know, most concerned about to make a backup of it. So if you do have to unsynchronize something and you have to re-import it manually, you have some place to go back to. But I would check iCloud first and take a look on the web interface. I think you're going to find some good information there.
And on that note, thank you very much, Mary. On that note, we are out of time, Jesse. Thank you so much. You're back on December 14th, I believe.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you again for being with us. Appreciate it very much. Jesse LeGru from Madison College's Technology Services Group. Great to have him with us. And thank you so much for listening in today. I really appreciate it, and I hope you'll stay with us because there's lots more in store right through the afternoon here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.